From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
It's been horrible. It's been horrible for my family. It's been horrible for my staff. It's been horrible for the family of my staff. I'm looking forward to vindicating myself. I'm going to tell you up front, that is going to happen. And you know what? Dan Ruthford is not going away.
This didn't end up, in case you didn't know, the way we hoped. I can't tell you that I'm here to congratulate anybody on winning this election because, frankly, it seems rather close and we have yet to see. But I will tell you this. The Brady family and the Rodriguez family are going to do everything they can to support whoever our nominee is.
You know, we were down a lot in these polls, and those polls weren't very accurate. And we came real close, thanks to your support. One message for the Illinois Republican Party is you ought to follow our broad-based coalition if you ever really want to become the majority in Illinois again.
Pat Quinn has been governor for 5 years. And he wants to be governor for five more years. No way! No way!
I may not have nine mansions. I have one house. I'm not a billionaire and never will be. I'm not part of the 1% and never will be there. I'm not even part of the 0.01%.
The comments of the winners and losers in the Illinois governor's primaries this past week. Governor Pat Quinn there making comments as he easily won the Democratic primary. And then that contested Republican primary, Bruce Rauner the winner, though much closer race, edging out Senator Kirk Dillard, who we also heard, and trailing far behind Senator Bill Brady and Treasurer Dan Rutherford. We'll peel away the layers on the primary election. Also this week, Speaker Michael Madigan asks, who wants a millionaire tax? I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel this week includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at University of Illinois Springfield. At the WUIS IPR State House Bureau, Brian Mackey is there. And from Chicago, in Chicago Public Radio Studios, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio. And our guest this week, Chicago Public Radio's Tony Arnold. Tony, glad to have you on the program today.
No, thanks for having me.
Well, Tony and Amanda, you were up in the Chicago area covering the happenings primary night and what has evolved into campaign conversations already in the first couple of days. So we'll get this thing rolling. First, we had a closer election than I think a lot of people anticipated when it came to Bruce Rauner and Kirk Dillard.
That's right. And, you know, as we heard there at the top of the show, that the polls had been showing that Bruce Rauner had quite a large lead, sometimes even up to 20-point lead over State Senator Kirk Dillard. And the results turned out to be quite different than that. The reasoning, I think, is that we've seen a few different things. One is that there may have just been more support for Kirk Dillard from non-Republicans who might not have been part of those polls. And what I mean by that is that there had been this big effort by labor groups to rally their own members to vote for Kirk Dillard instead of Bruce Rauner because they are so anti-Bruce Rauner. And so they might not have been included in those polls, and that, as a result, we got a much closer results. You know, as a result of that, Kirk Dillard, in the days that have followed here, he's been quite vocal, I think, about criticizing not just the process and Bruce Rauner still, but also just kind of the party itself, the Republican Party, for going for someone who's been able to come in and spend so much of his own money to win this election. And you know, they have this unity party the day after the election, and Kirk Dillard wasn't there, and he's been very vocal saying this was an election that was completely bought by someone who hasn't put in the ground game for years in Springfield and has been able to come in and just get up this support and get this name recognition purely because he made $53 million last year and was able to put $6 million of his own money in.
And that $6 million of his own money that he put in amounts to about $18.50 per per vote that he managed to get in the primary. That's about the cost of that watch that he likes to tout in his campaign ads. But I think we're just going to see even more of this heading into the general election. I mean, the man has very deep pockets.
It occurred to me that it was also very much a regional election. If you look at the unofficial results and kind of draw a line across the state at Interstate 80, those areas south of that line went pretty much totally for Kirk Dillard. There were a couple counties for Rauner. Senator Brady carried his home county. Treasurer Rutherford carried his home county. They each picked up a couple others. But the vast majority of the counties in central and southern Illinois and western Illinois voted for Kirk Dillard. I think part of it was because Rauner's message was so anti-union that the Republican voters in those areas that have state facilities in particular, they are Republicans, but they belong to a union. Not everybody who's in a union is a Democrat. And those Republican union members in those downstate counties reacted to Rauner's message demonizing public workers. And I think a lot of them had Dan Rutherford proved to be in the final analysis a viable candidate. A lot of them may have been with the treasurer. They went with Kirk Dillard. He was endorsed by the two teachers unions. So I'm sorry, Amanda, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just think looking back, you can't – there is, first of all, the Republican Party, and what are they to do? Because yet again, they have a four-way primary, and you see time and time again these contests that Judy Bart Topinka once referred to as circular firing squads, and it ends with the candidates beating one another up when the Democrats have nothing like that. And there are so many elements that play into that as we look back. Was the Republican Party, was there almost an effort to go ahead, Bruce Rauner? This is a guy with the money that they haven't been able to put in, especially in a state like Illinois where you have, because Democrats are in control, it's almost this prophecy where they keep on, or you know, the circle that doesn't stop, because they are end up getting so many more campaign contributions than Republicans because Republicans are in the minority. Was it almost an illicit effort to try and make Rauner the winner, or is this just, you know, how Republicans, you talk to the head of the state party, Jack Dorgan, and he's like, that's not my job. I've talked to each of the candidates leading up to the election. We're prepared to come together afterward, and it's up to the voters. Had it been Rutherford that had stayed in the race, maybe had unions come forward earlier, if they were really that against Bruce Rauner, you have to wonder, why did they wait so very long? They maintained that that was the strategy from the onset, that they wanted to see who was number two, and that was perhaps very wise, again, because clearly we saw the downfall of the Rutherford campaign. But nonetheless, had they gotten out there in front earlier and given Kirk Dillard a bigger lead before, just a week or two before the primary race, then maybe this would have been an entirely different election, would have given him more money, more enthusiasm, and it could have been a totally different outcome as a result.
I think you're absolutely right about the party, though. I mean, Jack Dorgan can say, yeah, the party did not formally decide that we should just kind of get behind Rauner. But a lot of the bigwigs in the party, the sort of unofficial leaders of the party, did. You saw Jack Roser, who is a strong social conservative, very pro-life, kind of swallow that concern in favor of some of Mr. Rauner, because Bruce Rauner has basically said that he's pro-choice in just about as many words. He swallowed his distaste, whatever distaste he might have had for supporting a pro-choice candidate, because he, I think, made the calculation that Bruce Rauner can win. And Bruce Rauner managed to lock up not only with his own wealth, but he had, I mean, we talked about the $6 million he put in, but he had $14 million. A lot of the very richest people in Illinois were contributing to his campaign, and the other candidates were kind of locked out. I wonder how much of that circular firing squad you really have, because the other guys, in terms of, for those of us who pay a lot of attention to government, we certainly saw the negative attacks on Rauner, but there wasn't that much negative advertising. It came very late in the game. Rauner had been on the air for months defining himself in his, you know, Carhartt coat and cheap watch and positive terms before the others even had a chance to attack him. And he's in a relatively strong position going into the general election, although he did underperform. And, you know, we can talk a little bit about the union role in that.
And the unions did have a role in a couple of ways. They had the negative campaigning. They helped pay for those ads towards the end. And what I think will be ever difficult to gauge, and it'll be interesting to see, was there this Democratic crossover? Certainly there was anecdotal evidence of such a thing occurring. But as Charlie mentions, some of the downstate members might have been just unionized Republicans. And overall, turnout was lousy. But also overall, DuPage County, your strongest Republican county in Illinois, still went substantially for Rauner, even though Dillard was from DuPage.
Well, I think part of that was the fact that Rauner had saturated the Chicago airwaves. And a lot of the his strong vote came up in that Chicago area. I'm pretty sure that if you, even going north of I-80 and going west of the Chicago media market, I'm pretty sure that Dillard may have outperformed Rauner in the other 96 counties.
Well, yeah, it was substantial, but the turnout was just, I mean, we know turnout's going to be lower in off-year primary, but it was horrifically low, I thought.
Yeah, but I think this union, yeah, certainly anecdotally, and I've heard from a lot of people, family sources, about Democrats pulling Republican ballots to vote against Rauner and for Dillard. But somebody reported this week that in Sangamon County right here, obviously high interest in state government, a lot of both unionized and non-union state employees here. But you had normally the ratio of Republican to Democratic ballots here is something like 65 to 35 or so, and instead this time there was 85% Republican ballots. I mean, that suggests that you had a lot more people than the usual Republican voting block here in Springfield, at least, pulling Republican ballots. You had a lot of Democrats pulling Republican ballots, and it contributed that there wasn't a lot of activity on the Democratic side. They didn't really have a competitive race to worry about at the top of the ticket. And you also saw an interesting thing happen just in terms of this dissatisfied union vote. Governor Quinn lost a lot of downstate counties too, particularly
30,
striking
30.
Since
T.O. Hardeman won 30 counties.
Right. And it's striking because his opponent is a no-name, unfunded anti-violence activist from Chicago or Chicagoland. He happens to be African-American. You don't usually associate downstate counties with going for African-American candidates.
Although Jesse White is always
Jesse White being an exception, but yes. But I mean, it's just a stunning result, and it really suggests a dissatisfaction among members of unions out there.
Well, you know, there is one way that you could test the crossover, but it would require a lot of time and effort, and it would be some project for somebody who's doing a PhD dissertation. All voting records in terms of what ballot you asked for are public, and what you could do if you wanted to, and it would be a massive undertaking, would be just select a few counties and go in and look at who asked for Republican ballots this time around? What ballot did they ask for 4 years ago?
Now, there are a lot of things we need to talk about election-related, but I do kind of want to go around the table real fast. I'll start with Charlie. Of this gubernatorial campaign, anything that surprised you most out of this election?
Well, I think that what surprised me most was what happened to Dan Rutherford. That was something that, you know, was not foreseen. So that for me, that was probably the, you know, man, I thought I saw it all, and now along comes this.
Tony Arnold.
I think I would say how close the Republican primary actually was, the final results. I was surprised that it actually went quite late into the night, and it looked like it was going to be much closer, or that Dillard actually had more of a chance than I think anyone gave him credit for. And two, I think I would say the fact that Pat Quinn was able to not campaign almost the entire time. He hardly had to do anything. He didn't do any ads. Once any threats from his own party, whether it was Attorney General Lisa Madigan or former Barack Obama's, President Obama's Chief of Staff Bill Daley got out of the race, he really didn't have to do any sort of campaigning at all.
Amanda.
You know, I don't know if it's surprising, but at the very least notable. This is really a campaign that was done not by, you know, the door-to-door knocking, but it was done over the airwaves. And although Quinn did not actively campaign, he sure as heck had a manufactured presence on the state side of things and then kept incredibly quiet leading up to the primary, I think, watching for any mistakes and letting the Republican dominoes fall where they may. A smart move by him in terms of, I think, on the primary night, already coming out with an anti-Rauner ad. And lo and behold, what if the Dillard had squeaked out that win? Who knows what sort of position Quinn would have been in? That could have been interesting to cover. But just the manufactured tone of all of this, and I think already how much of that we're going to see going forward. Also, I'll add the pivot by Bruce Rauner so very quickly. He had played his cards carefully in a Republican primary race, trying to not talk a lot about abortion issues, talking a lot about his stance on guns. And, you know, he's a hunter and being the Republican. And even we heard him consistently repeat government union bosses. Lo and behold, in his victory speech, he was beaming up there and you would have thought those words would have come out. But no, instead, he took the quickest pivot that you could see, and it was like he was on a basketball court of an election, and is trying to, it seems, move away from that, already announcing support from Democrats, independents, and being a whole new Bruce Rauner who's presenting himself now to a statewide audience of both parties.
And Brian, if I can jump in here for a minute, Amanda, I think what you mentioned about the union bosses, we may not hear that expression again.
I'm guessing not.
No, to answer Bill's question about things we're surprised at and bring that section to a close, it has to do with unions as well. And that's, I'm guessing that there were a number of columnists, newspaper writers who had stories kind of pre-written, obituaries for organized labor in Illinois, just like we've seen in Wisconsin and in other states where unions have really been beaten up by Republican governors and gubernatorial candidates. And instead, the union surprised everyone by flexing their muscles and getting Dillard as close as they did.
This is State Week. Coming up, we'll talk more about some of the election items and attacks on millionaires just ahead.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, Brian Mackey, and Chicago Public Radio's Tony Arnold. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Well, you alluded to what you called the pivot of Bruce Rauner. Let's talk, Amanda and Tony, you've both been in Chicago this week, and it's been already a little bit of campaigning, a little bit of attacking each other. One even poised himself with a major campaign announcement, Bruce Rauner, just to let us know that a few Democrats were supporting him. If both of you want to take a couple of minutes here and just bring us up to date on how fast the campaign's moving already.
I'll leave this to Tony, but I just would like to amend, I don't think a little bit, I'll say a lot.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's, 36 hours after the primary results were in, Bruce Rauner had a press conference saying, I have Democrats supporting me. You take a look at some of those Democrats, though. One of them, first of all, was his wife, Diana, who actually played almost no public role in the primary election at all. And then right after the results come in for the general election, she now is having a presence. She addressed the media. She introduced herself as a lifelong Democrat. And so all of a sudden now we have more of a picture of Bruce Rauner, the family man, when before he was acting very much solely, and the most we heard about his family was about his daughter going to a different school in Chicago rather than her home school. Looking at some of these lists of Democrats who supporting Bruce Rauner, you know, I'm not sure how much this is going to have an influence in turning out the vote of Democrats in favor of him. One of them is, you know, was Newt Minow, who I don't know if many people, you know, looked for his opinion about, especially in Illinois, at least for who they're going to be supporting for governor. Another one is Manny Sanchez. He's done some work for turning out the vote of Latinos for Barack Obama's presidential campaigns. But he also, you know, he was appointed to the Illinois Sports Facilities Authority by Governor Pat Quinn, who later then kicked him off. And so he has, you know, he says it's not, this is not payback. This is not about being kicked off this board by Governor Quinn. But, you know, that he's now he's supporting Bruce Rauner. You had to wonder if that's not part of this thinking behind it. So,
and that, State Senator James Meeks, who also considered running against Governor Quinn 4 years ago.
Exactly.
Or maybe that was 8 years ago in Blagojevich. I lose track. But what were there, like 24? Was that the number I saw? Democrats and independents?
I think it was about 20 or so.
Yeah, right around there. Right.
Okay, so I just did a quick calculation. Governor Quinn got 1.7 million votes in 2010. So this is 0.00001% of Democrats.
Less than the 0.01%.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, we need to remember this is a very small amount of people. I mean, Bruce Rauner's pivot, I'm kind of stunned by it, but I shouldn't be surprised because every time we reporters would try to ask, it's very frustrating. Every time we would try to pin him down on an issue that was not his preferred talking point of the day, he would deflect and say, we'll get to that later. We'll have time for that later. I'm here to talk about XYZ today. And if you don't take a lot of positions, it's hard to call you a flip-flopper. So now he can say, I mean, the labor thing is different because he was clearly very vitriolic towards government, quote-unquote government union bosses, but he has made a point of not staking out strong positions on a lot of these issues, and that does make it easier to pivot, as we're saying. Or
and in that regard, he has a lot in common with Governor Pat Quinn.
He certainly does. Another man who does not like to take positions on specifics until he absolutely has
to. Repeats the same old lines. So we have two candidates that, like I said, in the primary it was manufactured. I think we're going to have that same presence in the general election. But it will be even nastier. And so, again, kind of getting back to that, you had Rauner immediately out of the gates blaming Quinn. And I think he's not alone in this regard in saying that Quinn has not done a good enough job with job growth and getting Illinois' economy on track. The state does have the second lowest unemployment rate in the nation, and so frustration about that. But he also has begun to use the line that he says Quinn governs by division and wasn't really able to give a good example of what exactly he means by that, but is using this process of division and just saying Quinn is a failed leader as well. Right back at him, Quinn is quite clearly trying to make this a campaign less even about the issues, save for minimum wage, but at the very least about class warfare. And I will say in the opening comments, Quinn does have two homes right now. His Chicago one, also that governor's mansion. And so as they fight for that, we're hearing Quinn time and time again refer to Rauner and his nine residences and trying to make this an election where Rauner is a bad guy because he is rich. And Rauner responding to that saying, hey, that's the American dream. And that's what I want for other people. And that's what Quinn is preventing so many people from achieving, particularly because education is so poor, and taking a two-pronged approach, blaming Quinn, of course.
And I'm going to interrupt you. I'm going to interrupt you just because we're going to run out of time here if we don't get to some other topics. In this race, there were a few candidates that the House Speaker was supporting that did not fare well. Can somebody give a quick update on that?
Yeah, this is Tony Arnold. You know, real quick here, he was supporting Representative Toni Berrios. She represents parts of Chicago's Northwest Side, and she was defeated by challenger Will Guzzardi, who ran against her last time and just barely lost by just over 100 votes to her 2 years ago. He ran again against her and this time beat her quite resoundingly, I would say. And that's something where that's been a long time race where Berrios, Toni Berrios, her father is the Cook County assessor. He's very good friends with the speaker, is
the machine went all out for that race.
Yeah, he's chairman.
This is a great example
of
the progressive versus the machine. This is an old story in Illinois, right? The Ivy League candidate comes in, plays I'm the idealistic guy, want to make a difference in politics, and has to run against the machine candidate.
The other race I talked about real quickly is Representative Derek Smith, who has a very storied career at the State House in just a couple of years. And that's because he was appointed to the position Within that, before he even was up for election, he was indicted for taking a bribe. He still has yet to stand trial for that, but he's pleaded not guilty. He was kicked out of the House. Actually, wait. He won the primary because a Republican was running in the Democratic primary. Democrats said, vote for the indicted candidate, Derek Smith, because we don't want the Republican to be up for the Democratic nomination. So Derek Smith won the Democratic primary. He was supposed to step down. They thought he would step down. He didn't. Instead, the House members had to kick him out of the House, something that hadn't been done in 100 years. He then had a third-party challenger, won, and then has been serving as the state representative of Illinois.
Derek Smith won. Yeah, yeah.
Derek Smith won. And then here this year, finally, he was up again. He had several challengers and was defeated by Pamela Reeves Harris, who had the support of some local aldermen on Chicago's west side.
Also this week, we had the Illinois House Speaker come out and propose a tax on millionaires. In the remaining 2.5 minutes of the show, let's tear that apart.
Yeah, so he had a press conference in the Capitol, and he basically says it would be a 3% tax on any income $1 million or greater. And the idea is it would all go towards education, and it would be divided per student. He estimated this would bring in about $1 billion, a little more than $1 billion, and it would be divvied up evenly across the state. So rich districts, poor districts, they could use it for construction, or they could use it for property tax relief if they wanted to. He says that, you know, obviously the state has had a hard time funding education since the economic crisis in 2007, 2008. And he says that he thinks millionaires are in a better position to be able to fund education. And he should know because he's a very wealthy lawyer. And he said in some years, at least, even he would be subject to this tax.
Charlie, I'm going to go with Charlie on this. Your take real fast on, do you think he's serious about this? Does he throw it out for fun just to get?
I think there'd be a couple of reasons behind it. One, the politics. This is an issue that will resonate with a lot of people who would say, yeah, why should people who have extraordinary amounts of money, who've done very well under the system, you know, the top 1%, while the other 99% suffer, and there's been a massive transfer of wealth over the last several decades from the middle class to the elites, why should they have to kick in a little more on their excess, the dollars that they earn in excess of $1 million, up to $1 million. If your taxable income is $999,999, you would pay the same rates as everybody else. For every dollar beyond that, you would pay 3% more. And so that's kind of the politics of it. But it occurred to me also that the amount that he says it would raise, $1 billion, is roughly equivalent to the amount of money that we're going to lose in this next budget year. So I would find it conceivable that were this to go on the ballot, be approved by the electorate, then there would be no need to continue the income tax and at the 5% level, let it roll back for individuals to 3.75%.
And we will talk about that in the coming weeks, I'm sure. That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to our guest, Tony Arnold of Chicago Public Radio Station WBEZ. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org or find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer, Greg Manfroy, and WBEZ. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.